Guest for you tonight. My first guest is an extraordinary woman on the American scene in many ways. She is, for my money, one of America's finest, truly most accomplished, talented, and honorable journalists, both broadcast and print. She is Mary Starrett, who for many of you in the Pacific Northwest certainly is a household name, a household face, and a trusted friend in the media. Mary is now writing full-time columns for newsreviews.com, and when you click on her name in a couple of minutes, you'll go right to her archive homepage. Her current article, by the way, that she doesn't mince words here. Here's the title. Try this one on. Why I'd Vote for Al Sharpton Before I'd Vote for George Bush. And then she goes on to start things off by saying, actually, I'd even vote for Hillary before I'd vote for re-electing George Walker Bush. A lot of people out there might wince at that, but here to do some explaining is one of the truly great ladies in this business, Mary Starrett. Welcome, Mary.
Jeff, I appreciate it. Those are kind words coming from you. They mean a lot. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you. Now, you have shifted away from the broadcast end of things and you're writing now, and I would dare say that your writing has probably stirred up as much interest amongst people as many of the years of what we both used to do, sitting in front of the camera, reading other people's copy. You've written some dynamite material.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'll tell you what. The one thing that I learned is that if you try to in any way tell the truth on television or radio, there's going to be so much of an outcry from the powers that be that you're not going to last long. So after 20 years in television, I had a choice to make. Could I continue to play that game with more and more of an emphasis on a biased spin on things, if you would? You think you can do that in radio, and then you go to work in an environment where you think you're going to be able to tell the truth. Well, that doesn't work either. So really the last bastion is what's being called the muster of the 21st century, and that's the Internet. And until such time as that is taken away as a form, for most people, I think a lot of thinking, critically thinking people are getting their information from the Internet. Because even, as you know, on the radio, you're the last guy. As far as telling the truth, you can't do that and stay on the air.
No, it's true. And believe me, I have taken a lot of shots from a lot of special interest groups and others over the years, as you well know. I don't know how much longer even people like myself will be able to do this because of the acquisitions. That's all merger and acquisition now. And as the big fish eat the little fish, the platforms for independent thought and what we call reality, I think, are just vanishing.
Except we got some good news today. If you read about the House rejecting that media cap.
Let's see what the Senate does, and let's see if Michael Powell's father's alleged boss will sign it if the Senate passes it. What she's talking about is the House approved a bill, or I guess an amendment to a bill, which would slap down that asinine, horrible FCC decision, increasing the percentage of ownership in major markets that a single corporation can own in terms of television stations. I'm not sure if that included radio and TV or if it was just TV, but it might have been all the electronic media in one market to, what would they come up with, 40% was it, or 60%?
From 35 to 40%. Would basically raise that 35% cap.
Yeah, well, Michael Powell, by the way, and not many people know this, I've mentioned it here a few times, Michael Powell wanted no cap. He wanted to take it off completely. And then, of course, he was waving that free enterprise banner that we can't have any stifling in the marketplace, so there shouldn't be a cap on anything, which is crap, of course. But, he wanted no cap. So it's at 40 now.
Well, and basically this was a quid pro quo for the Bush administration, because if you know, for instance, Clear Channel and a variety of other stations were basically determining what their local talk show hosts were saying regarding the war. So all these months preceding this vote in June by the FCC, you wind up saying, okay, well, let's not criticize the administration, let's not criticize the war. And these were talk show hosts who were told not to do that.
Sure.
And then you turn around and it's just, we'll do this if you do that.
Exactly. Most talk show hosts are in the business not not for reasons of ethics, journalism, truth, or reality. They're in the business primarily driven, as we well know, by ego. Mm-hmm. They want to be stars. They want to be. I've brought so many people into television news over the years, and after a couple of months, most of them had heads as big as watermelons, mm-hmm. and they were quietly sending out audition tapes to larger markets, trying to climb the ladder of stardom. And that same ethic is propelling most people, not all, most in talk radio. It's a bad scene.
I had a guy who does a radio talk show host. He hosts a radio talk program. A lot of people would consider him, quote, very conservative. He talked to me and had originally asked me to be on his program. After we talked for a few minutes, he kind of started backing off scheduling me. I later found out that he was, in essence, saying that I was just way out there and kind of a crackpot. So he was, every time I would return his calls, mm-hmm. he would not have his appointment book there. So here's a guy who thinks he's going to get one thing, finds out that what I'm really saying is that, yeah. no, we can't have you saying that.
Well, he doesn't want any heat on his chair. That's the problem. He would bring, obviously, heat on him for mm-hmm. being on his program. That's mm-hmm. what this is all about.
Yes.
Protect thyself
mm-hmm.
at all costs. Okay, now, 20 years in television news. You've seen it all. You've been there. You've done that. You still have a great following in the Northwest, of course. Even my program producer tonight said, Mary Sterrett? She's excited. You made an impression. Now, when you left the business, I know when I walked away from it after 12 years, it wasn't 20, but it was long enough, I had this feeling before departing, and it was not a good feeling. I think you know the feeling. You go to work, it slowly builds over time. It's kind of a big gray millstone of I don't know how to express it. I just had, the spark was gone. It wasn't there. I knew I wasn't doing what I needed to do, what I could do, and I felt like a prostitute, and I just couldn't do that.
Oh, I agree. And I did news. I was a news anchor and a news reporter and a medical reporter for a number of years, and then went into a morning talk program here in the Portland area and was hosting that for 12 years. And what I found was while I was in news, at the last 17 years, I was not doing news. I was doing programming. I was doing morning talk show type of fluff stuff. But even in that, whenever I tried to bring in another element of thought, I was told to basically stand down. And after a while, I couldn't do it. But, yeah, you get to the point where you do feel like you've got to wash your hands of it because it conflicts with your integrity.
Sure.
And as you mentioned, Jeff, the majority of people would much rather stay on the air and their integrity be damned.
Oh, absolutely. They'll do anything. The biggest thing in television news reporting for most people, especially in the lower markets, and I'm sure the bigger markets too, to a large degree, is the stand-up close.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, folks. And on radio, you'll hear that at the end of the news story when the reporter gets to give his or her name. That's what it's all about. That's what's really pushing the vast majority of people in journalism. Hate to say it, but it's true.
Well, it's not journalism. It's all about face time. These people couldn't write their way out of a paper bag. Couldn't enterprise or investigate a story if their life depended on it. But give me, you know, this much face time, and I'll be happy.
You got it. Absolutely. So where is television news going? Is it about as far gone as it can get? When you look at state-run television, which we also call Fox News,
mm-hmm.
and some of the other channels, it's actually, to me, and I'm sure to you and many of our listeners, embarrassing. I mean, it's so damn transparent now.
Well, you've got them functioning as lapdogs for the administration, and if this had happened during the Democrat administration, if this had happened during Clinton's tenure, we would have said, oh, look at the media is biased. Mm-hmm. We don't acknowledge that the media is biased today. Look at Fox. People think that Fox is going to be the conservative voice. It's anything but.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what amazes me is that it's not, they're not just doing the bidding of others, they're owned by the others.
Mm-hmm.
Look at who owns the corporations. Look where it's all gone. The last gasp, I think, of American journalism greatness was probably Vietnam shortly thereafter. But when the invasion of Grenada occurred and the American media was basically put into the press briefing room and that was it, given their daily little diet of handouts, and they duly reported that, I said, it's over. It's over. That's the end of it. And we look at the first Gulf War and this the second Gulf, well, I didn't even call them wars, the Iraq slaughter, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. It's the same thing. They're less and more than lapdogs at the same time. It's embarrassing.
You know? But what's frightening is that people will think that people like Bill O'Reilly, who I used to work with, by the way, Hannity or Michael Savage, they are being told that these are conservatives who speak for them, and here are guys who basically parrot. It's certainly not a conservative voice, and that this is what they think, this is who speaks for them. Well, they don't speak for me.
No, indeed, they don't speak for, I think, the vast majority of people listening to this program either. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes with Mary Sterrett and talk about several interesting issues. Do visit her website and read her material. It is first rate at newswithviews.com. Tonight, her articles appear at newswithviews.com. A little bit later this evening, we'll be talking with the man behind newswithviews.com, Mr. Paul Walter. It'll be fun to talk to him. It's a great little website and growing all the time. Harry, tell me about the talk radio business. When you left television and entered that, your expectations, as you said, were hopeful, and I think we all feel that way. And I think a lot of people out there listening to talk radio don't really understand the business and what's behind it. I get email all the time, why can't we get you in New York? Why can't we get you in Philadelphia? And I'm not able to answer all of them. I try to tell them that, look, that these cities are owned and operated by two or three corporations which only put their own owned talent on their own stations. And that's the long and short of it. We, independents, as even though I'm with Talk Radio Network, I'm considered an outsider. We don't get into those big cities.
I think it's very plain. My experience has been getting out of television. I thought, well, I'll find a forum in radio, perhaps working for Christian radio or working at a station, a smaller station, where we're not going to have the same canned, homogenous approach to all the different issues. That's not the case. You cannot anymore. Very few exceptions. You cannot get on the air and talk about what's really going on because somebody owns that station and is owned, as you mentioned.
But mergers, acquisitions, yeah, it doesn't matter what level you are because the walls have ears, friends, and even the smallest small-town stations are often owned by major corporate conglomerates.
Right. If you were to get on the air as I did and run down the pharmaceutical companies or run down, for instance, you name it, just tell the truth about what's going on. There is a dollar attached to everything you're talking about. For instance, if I got on the air and talked about the dangers associated with mercury amalgam fillings, well, we have dentists who advertised on our station, and I couldn't do that.
Right.
And I talk about the pharmaceutical companies and some of the bad information out there and how everybody's getting hoodwinked into thinking they've got to be on some antidepressant or something. Well, you talk about that, and you're going to hear about it. So ultimately, your days are numbered, and that's what happened to me.
I was with Clear Channel's predecessor, J-Corp,
mm-hmm.
and Premier Radio Networks, and I did a program one night on aspartame.
Mm.
Just told the truth. Forget who the guest was, but, you know, the truth is pretty frightening. Well, the next day, guess who got called into an office?
Mm-hmm.
It was me, and I was told that, gee, it probably would be a real good idea if we didn't do those kinds of programs because we have a lot of sponsors like Pepsi and
yeah.
Coke, and
mm-hmm.
they really weren't happy with what happened last night. And then this executive, nice guy, and you get him one-on-one, they're pretty nice people, but when you put them in their corporate office, their desk, in their chair, they're different people. And he said, let me get this on the table. Let me explain to you why you're here.
Mm.
Okay? He says, you're here not because of listener loyalty or program content or anything you've done in broadcast journalism. You are here for one reason. You are here, along with your program, to serve as a platform upon which we may sell commercials.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. If you're not a good platform, you're going to be out of here.
Well, the thing people need to remember exactly that when they listen to the radio, because with the exception of your program and very few others out there, what they're listening to is nothing but a vehicle to sell ads. And if you say anything that's counter to what is being sold, you're not going to stay on the air.
No, it's real simple. You're out.
Absolutely. And I can remember talking about, for instance, prior knowledge, that the Bush administration had to have had prior knowledge. Well, you would have thought I talked about how wonderful child molestation was. I was called into the office. I was yelled at. I had people calling. How dare you question this? How dare you say that what happened on September 11th is something that could have been stopped? And I knew at that point my days were numbered. So after September 11th, I knew I wasn't going to be there much longer. And it was true.
And there's really no redress. There's nothing, see, friends, there's nothing we can do as hosts or journalists or citizens with integrity to change that. They own the program.
Mm-hmm.
They own the airwaves. It's that simple. Nothing we can do except walk and try to find another venue like Mary has now to begin writing to tell the story, tell the truth. Yeah, there are a few good stations out there. Talk Radio Network certainly has a lot of hosts who I don't agree with, but I have to thank them and salute them for keeping me on the air. They've certainly taken some heat from certain special interest groups over some of the programs I've done, but we're still here, and to that end, we have to all be thankful.
Yeah, you take on the big special interest. For instance, I wrote an article about on newswithviews.com about how Walmart and Gillette were going hand in hand.
Oh, the RFID, sure.
Yeah, radio frequency ID chips in certain products, certain Gillette products. Well, I wrote that story, and understandably, there's some concern. You've got two big companies.
Yeah.
Could go after me personally, could go after the website, which, of course, we know that's not true because now the websites are being considered immune from publishing other people's stuff, so they can't be hit with anything. But you have to figure that everybody's bigger than we are, and when we try to tell the truth, someone's going to go after us.
All too true. All right, stand by. I'll be right back with Mary in just a couple minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're along. 800-876-4123 if you have a question for this outstanding American journalist as we continue. We are back. I'm talking to Mary Sarah. Here's an email question for you, Mary. When you were anchoring the news, is it true that most copy read by news anchors is pretty much what we used to call rip and read or off the wires, maybe slightly rewritten? How do you get the news as a news anchor?
Well, that rip and read is kind of, I guess it's a little antiquated term, but basically what happens is that there is for instance, if there's something, let's just say off the wire, let's go with that.
A regional story or national.
Yeah, or a national story or a regional story. Yeah, it's a copy that comes from somewhere else. And you basically, it's written and it's typed in through the teleprompter and it's read. A local story, if you're looking at your local newscast, that's been written, the introduction to that story has been written by a reporter, and that's usually an introduction to what their story is going to be. So anchor will read that story, that copy. Then you'll have, in between the 6 and the 11 o'clock news, you'll have the anchors rewriting stories, shortening them. But basically, people need to know that there is no investigation going on in these stories. If someone hands them a press release, they'll print it up, they'll write it up, they'll put it on the air. You're hearing what some governmental agency wants you to hear.
Sure, and sometimes they'll even go and stand in front of a government building and interview somebody and then slice the rest of the press release around that little head bite.
And that's their story, and that's not the truth. That's what a government agency or a corporate entity wants the story to be. Investigation? No. Journalism? No.
Yeah, I remember so many times watching those news stories from the 6 o'clock show get just chopped down by about 30% and then repeated at the late show. It's the same thing.
Right. Hey. It's not news.
We had, when I first started the business, there was an anchor man who was the news director, and the early news was called I'm just going to call him the Jim Smith News.
Mm-hmm.
The Jim Smith Report. And the late news was called the Jim Smith Late Report.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jim used to go out after doing the early show and knock back four or five doubles,
mm-hmm.
come back about a half an hour before the late show and say, is my program ready?
Yep.
and we'd hand him his copy, and I don't know how the guy functioned. I mean, he was actually pink. He didn't need much makeup. We always call it, it wasn't the Jim Smith late report, we call it the late Jim Smith report, because he was so toasted that he came back. He did this for years.
This sounds, Jeff, like, you know, probably half a dozen news directors / anchors that I've worked with. So it's a pretty common occurrence.
Yep. Is my show ready? Is my, what a business. Well,
yeah.
It used to be fun. In the old days, you could still at least get out there and do a few things that were sometimes exciting and gave you a feeling of professional competence. But those days are long gone now. It's all canned. It's all product.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't measure up, you're in trouble.
Yeah, and if people would just, if they're not quite sure, what they need to do is sit and write down what the stories are, what you learned, what you were told. And then at the end of that, look and see, is this something I really needed to know?
Bless you for saying that. I used to give the same lecture on this program, and I haven't done it for a long time. Let me, on behalf of Mary, paraphrase what you just said. Take a pad and a pencil. Sit down and watch your local newscast. Say the 6 o'clock news or whatever it is. Start writing down each story. Just put a little title and approximately the time of that story. And look at the end of that hour, look back at those news stories and see what somebody has decided are the most important pieces of information in the universe for you to see and hear at the top of the 6 o'clock news. I think you're going to be amazed.
And people also should be asking themselves a question. When they hear a story that they can't believe is true, for instance, that Walmart and Gillette were practicing a field trial to have trackable radio frequency ID chips in their products and in their stores. When I would tell people that, they'd say, well, how come I didn't see it on the news? Or how could that be I didn't read it in the paper?
In other words,
it couldn't be.
Yeah. How come I didn't see it? How come it wasn't on the news? Boy, have I heard that too often.
Right.
See, that's how conditioned the average American is. If it's not on the tube, it's not real. There's something incredible about it.
And also, if it's not on the news, you must be some kind of a way-out kook, because if it were true, well, certainly Eyewitness News would have reported it, right?
Right. You betcha. You bet. What a scene. Okay, let's look back and give me just a couple highlights from your TV. What did you accomplish that you were proud of in that business?
I think that I was proud of taking some bullets. And being on the air, for instance, let me give you an example. I was working at an ABC affiliate in a medium-sized market, and I won't mention what that was. I was hosting a program that was an hour in length every day, and I was the co-host, so I was on the air for an hour every day.
Mm-hmm.
One of the topics that day was to interview women, three women who were who had their identity masked, and their whole reason to be was that they believed that the only guys you should date were married guys. So I sat there on the air and I said, look, if this is in any way offensive to you, that we've got these women who are advocating sleeping with married men, could you please call a general manager and express your discomfort with this wasting an hour?
Wow.
Well, I was given a 3-day suspension.
Wow.
And so, you know, this is what you're spending your time doing, is telling people about the, you know, this is an enormous waste of time, and this is what we gave people because this is what they wanted.
Yeah.
After a while, you get to the point where you think, this is not good, and I'm not going to advance it. But I think that I did a lot of stuff back when you said in the days when you could do enterprising reporting. You could do stuff that did make a difference, and those days are over now.
And the reason they're over is because those stations that Mary and I used to work at primarily have been bought up by these big corporations over the years. That's the primary reason. And as soon as they're owned and operated by a huge corporation, they're given their orders, their marching orders on how to work, how to report what is and is not to be covered. Their spin control is in everything now. Be right back in just a couple minutes with Mary. We are back. Jeff Rentz with Mary Sherritt. Yeah, I never thought I'd be able to say that, Mary, in the same sentence.
The honor is mine.
Well, You know, I was just thinking the other day about a story I read less than a year ago now. We talk about image, and when we look at all the bimbos and airheads reading the news at the major networks, the story was, I can't remember who published it, but it was very clear and succinct. It said, MTV executives hired to consult for CNN. MTV programming executive. It was one guy. Anyway, they hired this guy or a couple of people to come in to CNN to make it more hip, to make it more contemporary. And they started to integrate various rock, I guess the top rock tunes of the week, little thing would pop up. Their little factory things would come up and down. And it was, I laughed. It was so funny.
But the problem is that most people really do demand that overstimulation, that certain kind of packaging. It's got to look a certain way. They really don't care about the content.
Oh, no, it's pacing.
Yeah, people who are watching television or even, for the most part, listening to mainstream radio, if that's what they're using as their source, that's what they want, and that pretty much consider the source and figure out why the majority of Americans are allowing what's happening in this country to happen, because that's what they look for as their, at the end of the day, that's their information.
When you see a family sitting in the living room, we've all seen it, staring at the television in an altered state. I remember that when the first instance of that phenomenon hit me, it bothered me even then. I said, these people aren't here. They're under the control and influence of something that I have since termed as the most awesome weapon ever unleashed on humankind, that is television. And the Chinese knew about that. Their goal by the end of the year 2001 was to have a television in every household in China, and I believe they made it or very close to it. They know. There are things going on in television, electronically, in terms of the audio and video that are unregulated, shall we say. There are all sorts of unfolded, embedded informational ideas and issues going on there. People don't have a chance anymore. It takes, the first time you watch television, it takes about a minute and a half to become entrained. After the first couple of times, it takes less than 15 seconds, and you are in another space. And you are in another space, you're no longer able to discern and differentiate and make judgments about what's being poured into you. It just goes in.
People who don't believe that should read some of the primary sources of scientific information about what actually happens to the brain waves when you're watching television.
Yeah.
And if you doubt that, you say, oh, well, no, it's different. I can sit there and watch TV and I'm not affected. It's not true. You can't.
Thank you. You're absolutely right. And when that remote control, you got how many channels now?
Mm-hmm.
300? 2,000? I don't know. People sit in that chair or on that sofa and they just push that button until they get, it's a drug.
Yeah.
Until they get a fix or a hit on something that makes them feel at least distracted and in that space where they want to be, and that space is not reality.
That's exactly right.
And another thing, maybe you'll agree, maybe you'll disagree, but I've told the mothers and fathers listening out there many, many times, the first time you let your child or children alone in front of commercial television is the beginning of their reprogramming away from you as a parent and into a different mind state.
I couldn't agree more. I think that the best thing we can do for our children, although it might be more difficult for us because it is the electronic babysitter, the best thing we can do for our children is not just like the first, like giving a kid sugar. Once you have programmed a child to accept that as the acceptable taste, that's all that's going to taste good to that child.
Sure, and I know some of you are saying right now, well, Jeff, hey, what about some of the good programs on there? There are some good programs, and if you, as an astute parent, exercise wisdom and maturity and hold the line and expose your children to a rationed amount of television under the right circumstances, it can be a wondrous tool of instruction and learning.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, as you just said, Mary, it's the electronic babysitter, and parents are in a rush and they turn it on. They know that kid's going to be away from them for a while and they can go do what they need to do, whatever it is. And that's the problem. When you do that, friends, your kids are being basically disassembled and reassembled to be consumers. And your children are being brought up at that point in time on a diet of audio and visual amphetamines. It's pacing, it's speed, and those kids get so used to that cadence, they can no longer sit still, they can't read, they can't be creative, they can't draw. They are hooked on that pace.
Yeah, it's a level of stimulation that is just not natural for the human brain, and we do. We set our kids up, and that's the only thing that's going to work.
When you, and Mary's idea earlier of taking that pad and pencil and Niagara to just do that on the evening news, and then also do that on one of your, say, an hour of your kids' programming, and write down the commercials, what they are, how long they are, and watch and see. Let's take a 30-second commercial. I used to do that. I'd watch them and analyze them, and when I saw 30-second spots, Mary, with over 55 different, well, they were different scenes. Some were switch pans, zooms, reverse cuts. It didn't matter. 55 edits in the 30-second spot. Now, that's just the visuals. The sound, of course, was machine gun from beginning to end. I said, this is wrong. This is addicting. It's too fast.
Mm-hmm.
I could hardly watch it. And kids would say, I can see it. Why can't you understand it? It's too fast. And then they get hooked on that.
Exactly. And then they become, in other words, video games. That's the next progression.
The next day, sure, they're weaned right over to video games, and they're, goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
No more reality. It's a virtual world. But the 55-plus scenes, different scenes in the 30-second spot is too much for a 1 or 2 or 3 or 5-year-old or a 10-year-old. And then your kids get to be 10 and 12, and their hormones kick in. They've been reared on this incredible pace, this amphetamine, this sensory stimulation. They don't have much of a chance.
Yeah.
Sorry to say it.
Yeah, they don't have... They don't know what it's like to have a quiet mind, to have a peaceful mind. And then we say, well, they've got anxiety, so we put them on kitty crack, and then every little kid is on drugs because they got a problem.
And the beautiful term for a hideous, malignant enterprise called Ritalin, which many kids certainly get off of, only to get on Prozac. And the issue with Prozac, as you know, is that doctors do not tell people when they prescribe it, you're entering into a relationship with this chemical for the rest of your life.
Well, people don't realize if they were to truly look at the, don't listen to what they're telling you on television or in the ads in newspapers and in magazines. You need to know that these SSRIs, these selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, these depressive antidepressants that every doctor, every counselor, every school administrator is pushing, will effectively change your brain chemistry for the rest of your life. You wind up with suicide ideation, bloody types of nightmares that translate into violence, and this is why we see what we see in terms of mass violence in this country.
There is, we've done many programs on SSRIs before. There is an awful lot to be said about putting kids on that, and what Mary just said about biochemically changing the brain for the rest of the kids. Like, there are physiological changes in the brain. They've been photographed, imaged, however you want to phrase it, x-rayed and MRI'd. They're all permanent. These changes don't go back to the way that they used to be. And people just aren't told that. I don't know any doctor who's ever sat down and actually read the warning label to the patient before prescribing, especially with our children. They don't tell them. They call it sugar-coated Coke, basically a kitty crack. That's exactly what it is.
I would suggest people go to Dr. Bregan's website, Peter Bregan.
He's a hero. What a hero.
Bregin.com. If someone has told you, if someone has said to you, take an antidepressant or put your kid on kitty crack or Adderall or Ritalin or Prozac or Zoloft, before you ever take one of these pills, check out what he has to say about it, and it can truly save your life.
Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, just on the program again, too, another hero, drugawareness.org, an indispensable site. And if you are on these drugs and want to get yourself off, do not, I underline that, do not try to do it cold turkey.
No.
You must exercise extreme care and caution. Dr. Tracy will tell you how. You can contact her through the website drugawareness.org, or, as Mary mentioned, Dr. Peter Bregan at, I guess it's just Bregan.com, is it? Bregin.
Yes.
I had Peter on many times. There are some wonderful people doing this kind of work, but if you go on the evening news, Mary, and try to blow these stories open, you won't be on the evening news much longer.
Well, it'll never hit the air. You know that, Jeff.
Yep. Yep. No, it literally won't. The producer will say, I'm sorry, this is not running today.
No, not when you've got commercials that are before and after each news segment that are you know, Eli Lilly or whoever. Yeah. You're never going to get a segment like that on the air.
You know about Operation Northwoods, when the CIA boasted in the 1960s that there wasn't a major news media in this country that they couldn't call
mm-hmm.
or otherwise contact and put any story they wanted on at any time. That was 40 years ago, friends. 40.
So it's a whole lot worse now.
It's all over. Mary, we're out of time. You're going to come back in the future, I hope, and talk to us again.
I'd love to. And just keep up the good work, Jeff. And I would encourage your listeners to stand with you, because we really do need your voice now more than ever.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend. It's been a pleasure to have you. Thank
hey,
you.
Hey, take care of yourself.
Okay.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Mary Sterrett. She's a great one. And you can see her articles at newswithviews.com right now. And her current one up there, July 22nd. Why I'd vote for Al Sharpton before I'd vote for George Bush. Another terrific piece of writing that you ought to take a look at. We'll be bringing more of her articles for you at Rents.com. But right now, of course, they're always at newswithviews.com for you. Going to pause and come right back.